This is KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for Joe Woods and the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Right now, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Welcome to Gremlin Time. This is Fortunato. Tonight, for Halloween, we present a short story by pulp writer Robert E. Howard. Our story is set in the hill country of West Texas, which proved a hard life for settlers, having to deal with failed crops and bad weather. And Howard uses this historic content as a jumping-off point for a tale about a forgotten horror that has been hidden away for hundreds of years from a dark age. This story first appeared in the May 1932 issue of Weird Tales and is considered one of the earliest examples of the genre known as Weird Westerns, horror stories set in the American Southwest. And Howard was one of the earliest writers in this genre. So listen now to The Horror in the Mound, by Robert E. Howard.
Might as well face up to it.
Steve Brill sat on his sagging stoop that last evening.
Ain't no damn way around.
His thoughts were bitter as he surveyed his farmland.
Damn, why did I ever leave?
Brill was tall, rangy, and tough as boot leather. He was browned by the sun and strong as a longhorn steer.
Damn. What I'm gonna do.
His lean legs and the boots on them showed his cowboy instincts. Now he cursed himself.
I'm no damn farmer. Might I ever come off of that old crank-eyed Mustang of mine, I'll never know.
And yet his failure had not been his own fault. Plentiful rain in the winter, so rare in West Texas, had given promise of good crops. But as usual, things had happened. A late blizzard had destroyed all the budding fruit. The grain, which had looked so promising and yellow, was ripped to shreds and battered into the ground by terrific hailstorms. A period of intense dryness, followed by another hailstorm, finished the corn. Then the cotton, which had somehow struggled through, fell before a swarm of grasshoppers, which stripped Brill's field almost overnight. So, Brill sat and swore that he would not renew his lease.
At least I know when I've been licked. I'll admit that.
He gave fervent thanks that he did not own the land on which he had wasted his sweat.
Good thing I didn't sell my saddle.
And that there were still broad, rolling ranges to the west, where a strong young man could make his living riding and roping.
They'll probably laugh when they see me again in the bunkhouse, but at least I gave it a try.
Now, as Brill sat glumly, he was aware of the approaching form of his nearest neighbor, Juan Lopez.
Lopez, mi amigo.
Who lived in a hut just out of sight over the hill across the creek and grubbed for a living. At present, he was clearing a strip of land on an adjoining farm, and in returning to his hut, he crossed the corner of Brill's pasture. Brill idly watched him climb through the barbed wire fence and trudge along the path he had worn in the short, dry grass. He had been working at his present job for over a month now, chopping down tough, gnarly mesquite trees, digging up their incredibly long roots, and Brill knew that he always followed the same path home. And watching, Brill noted him swerving far aside, seemingly to avoid a low, rounded hillock which jutted above the level of the pasture. Lopez went far around this knoll, and Brill remembered that the old Mexican always circled it at a distance.
I wonder why he does that.
Another thing came into Brill's idle mind. Lopez always increased his gait when he was passing the knoll.
Yeah, he always does hurry away from there.
And he always managed to get by it before sundown.
Sure enough, there he is, picking up speed now.
Yet, Mexican laborers generally worked from the first light of dawn to the last glint of twilight, especially at these grubbing jobs, and they were paid by the acre, not by the day. Brill's curiosity was aroused.
Wonder.
Rose and sauntered down the slight slope on the crown of which his shack sat, hailed the plodding Mexican.
Hey, Lopez, wait a moment.
Lopez halted, looked about, and remained motionless, but unenthusiastic as the white man approached.
Lopez,
said Brill lazily.
Ain't none of my business, but I just wanted to ask you, how come you always go far around that old Indian mound?
Lopez shrugged his shoulders.
It's not a good place, Senor Brill. No bueno,
he muttered, avoiding Brill's eyes.
Sometimes it's best just to let hidden things rest.
I reckon you scared of ghosts? Shucks, if that's an Indian mound, them Indians have been dead so long, their ghosts would be plumb worn out by now.
Brill knew that the Mexicans looked with superstitious aversion on the mounds that are found here and there through the Southwest, relics of a past and forgotten age, containing the moldering bones of chiefs and warriors of a lost race.
Best not to disturb what is hidden in the earth.
Bosh, me and some boys busted into one of them mounds over in the Palo Pinto country. Dug up pieces of a skeleton with some beads and flint arrowheads and the like. Kept some of the teeth long time till I lost them. I ain't never been haunted.
Indians, snorted Lopez unexpectedly. We spoke of Indians. There have been more than Indians in this country. In the old times, strange things happened here. I have heard the tales of my people handed down from generation to generation. And my people were here long before yours, Senor Brill.
Yeah, you're right. First white men in this country was Spaniards, of course. Coronado passed along not far from here. I heard tell, and Hernando Estrada, his expedition came through here way back yonder, I don't know how long ago.
In 1545, they pitched camp yonder where your corral stands now.
Brill turned to gaze at his rail-fenced corral, inhabited now by a saddle horse, a pair of work horses, and a scrawny calf.
How come you know so much about it?
One of my ancestors marched with the Estrada, Portofio Lopez, a soldier, caballero. They were the best army in the world. He told his son of the expedition, and he told his son, and so down the family to me. I unfortunately have no son to whom I can tell it.
I didn't know you were so well connected. Maybe you know something about the gold Estrada was supposed to hit around here. So.
There was no gold. The Estrada soldiers wore only their arms, and they fought their way through hostile country. And he left their bones along the trail. Later, many years later, a mule train from Santa Fe was attacked not many miles from here by Comanches, and they hid their gold and escaped. So the legends got mixed up. But even their gold is not there now because gringo buffalo hunters found it and dug it up.
Brill nodded abstractedly, hardly heeding the words. For of all the continent of North America, there is no section so haunted by tales of lost or hidden treasure as is the Southwest. Uncounted wealth passed back and forth over the hills and plains of Texas and New Mexico in the old days when Spain owned the gold and silver mines of the New World and controlled the rich fur trade of the West. And echoes of that wealth lingered on in tales of golden catches. Some such vagrant dream, born of failure and pressing poverty, rose in Brill's mind. Finally he said,
well, anyway, I got nothing else to do, and I believe I'll dig into that old mound and see what I can find.
The effect of that simple statement on Lopez was nothing short of shocking. He recoiled, and his brown face went ashy. His black eyes flared, and he threw up his arms in a gesture of intense expostulation.
Dios, no, he cried. Don't do that, Senor Brill. There is a curse. A My grandfather told me.
Told you what?
Asked Brill. Lopez lapsed into sullen silence. I am sworn to silence. Only to an eldest son could I open my heart, but believe me when I say, better had you cut your throat than to break into that cursed mound.
Well,
said Brill,
if it's so bad, why don't you tell me about it? Give me a logical reason for not busting into it.
I cannot speak. I know, but I swore to silence on the holy crucifix, just as every man of my family has sworn. It is a thing so dark, it is to risk damnation, even to speak of it. Were I to tell you, I would blast the soul from your body. But I have sworn, and I have no son, so my lips are sealed forever.
Well, why don't you write it out?
Brill said sarcastically. Lopez stared, and startled, and to Steve's surprise, caught at the suggestion. I will. My oath said nothing of writing. I only swore not to speak. I will write out the whole thing for you, if you will swear not to speak of it afterward, and to destroy that paper as soon as you have read it.
Yeah, sure.
Bueno. I will go at once and write. Tomorrow, as I go to work, I will bring you the paper, and you will understand why no one must open that accursed mouth.
And Lopez hurried along his homeward path, his stooped shoulders swaying with the effort of his unwanted haste. Steve grinned after him, shrugged his shoulders, and turned back towards his own shack. Then he halted, gazing back at the low, rounded mound with its grass-grown sides. It must be an Indian tomb, he decided. What with its symmetry and its similarity to other Indian mounds he had seen, he scowled as he tried to figure out the seeming connection between the mysterious knoll and the martial ancestor of Juan Lopez. Brill's gaze, after the receding figure of the old Mexican, a shallow valley cut by a half-dry creek, bordered with trees and underbrush, lay between Brill's pasture and the low sloping hill beyond which lay Lopez's shack. Among the trees, along the creek bank, the old Mexican was disappearing, and Brill came to a sudden decision. Hurrying up the slight slope, he took a pick and a shovel from a tool shed built onto the back of his shack. The sun had not yet set, and Brill believed he could open the mound deep enough to determine its nature before dark. If not, he could work by lantern light. Steve, like most of his breed, lived mostly by impulse, and his present urge was to tear into the mysterious hillock and find what, if anything, was concealed therein. The thought of treasure came again to his mind.
What if, after all, that grassy heap of brown earth hid treasures? Virgin ore from forgotten mines, or the minted coinage of old Spain?
Was it not possible that the musketeers of El Estrada had themselves reared that pile above a treasure they could not bear away, molding it in the likeness of an Indian mound to fool seekers? Did old Lopez know that? It would not be strange if, knowing of treasure there, the old Mexican refrained from disturbing it. Ridden with grisly superstitious fears, he might well live out a life of barren toil rather than risk the wrath of lurking ghosts or devils. For the Mexicans say that hidden gold is always accursed. Surely there was supposed to be some special doom resting on this mound.
Well, Latin Indian devils had no terrors for the Anglo-Saxon tormented by demons of drought and storm and crop failure.
Steve set to work with the savage energy characteristic of his breed. The task was no light one. The soil, baked by the fierce sun, was iron hard.
mixed with rocks and pebbles. Brill sweated profusely, grunted with his efforts. The fire the treasure hunter was on him. He shook the sweat out of his eyes and drove in the pick with mighty strokes that ripped and crumbled the close-packed earth. The sun went down, and in the long, dreamy summer twilight, he worked on, almost oblivious of time or space. He began to be convinced that the mound was a genuine Indian tomb. As he found traces of charcoal and soil, the ancient people which reared these sepulchres had kept fires burning upon them for days at some point in the building. All the mounds Steve had ever opened had contained a solid stratum of charcoal a short distance below the surface. But the charcoal traces he found now were scattered about through the soil. His idea of a Spanish-built treasure trove faded, but he persisted. Who knows? Perhaps that strange folk men now called mound builders, had treasures of their own, which they'd laid away with the dead. Then Steve yelped in exultation as his pick rang on a bit of metal. He snatched it up and held it close to his eyes, straining in the waning light. It was caked and corroded with rust, worn almost paper thin, but he knew it for what it was, a spur rowel, a mistakenly Spanish with its long, cruel points. And he halted completely bewildered.
No Spaniard ever reared this mound.
And with its undeniable marks of Aboriginal workmanship, yet...
How came that relic of Spanish caballeros hidden deep in the packed soil?
Brill shook his head and set to work again. He knew that in the center of the mound, if it were indeed an Aboriginal tomb, he would find a narrow chamber built of heavy stone, containing the bones of the chief for whom the mound had been reared, and the victim sacrificed above it. And in the gathering darkness, he felt his pick strike heavily against something granite-like and unyielding. Examination by sense of feel, as well as by sight, proved it to be a solid block of stone, roughly hewn. Doubtless, formed one of the ends of the death chamber. Useless to try to shatter it, Brill chipped and picked about it, scraping the dirt and pebbles away from the corners until he felt that wrenching it out would be but a matter of sinking the pick point underneath and leveling it out.
Dark already.
But now he was suddenly aware that darkness had come on, and the young moon objects were dim and shadowy. Mustang nickered in the corral, whence came the comfortable crunch of tired beast jaws on corn. A whippoorwill called eerily from the dark shadows of the narrow, winding creek.
Straighten up.
Bill straightened reluctantly.
I better get a lantern.
Continue his explorations by its light.
Yeah, I got some matches.
He felt in his pocket with some idea of wrenching out the stone and exploring the cavity by the aid of matches. Then he stiffened.
Wait, what's that?
Was it imagination that he heard a faint, sinister rustling? It seemed to come from behind the blocking stones.
Snakes. Must have found a hole in the back. I'm in there.
Might be a dozen big diamondback rattlers coiled up in that cave-like interior.
Sure ain't gonna be poking my hand in there, no sir.
He shivered slightly at the thought. Backed away out of the excavation he had made. And for the past few minutes, he realized he was aware of a faint, foul odor oozing from around the blocking stone. Though he admitted that the smell suggested reptiles no more than it did any other menacing scent, it had a charnel house reek about it. Gases formed in the chamber of death, no doubt, dangerous to the living. Steve laid back the pick and returned to the house, impatient of the necessary delay. Entering the dark building, he struck a match.
Now, where did I put that old lamp?
located his kerosene lantern hanging on its nail on the wall.
Oh, there it is.
Shaking it, he satisfied himself that it was nearly full of coal oil and lighted it.
Yeah, it's got enough.
Then he fared forth again.
Better get back.
For his eagerness would not allow him to pause long enough for a bite of food. The mere opening of the mound intrigued him, as it must always intrigue a man of imagination, and the discovery of the Spanish spur whetted his curiosity. He hurried from his shack, the swinging lantern casting long, distorted shadows ahead of him and behind. He chuckled as he visualized Lopez's thoughts and actions when he learned on the morrow that the forbidden mound had been pried into. Good thing he opened it that evening. Brill reflected, Lopez might have tried to prevent him from meddling with it had he known. In the dreamy, hush summer night, Brill reached the mound, lifted his lantern.
What's happened?
The lantern revealed his excavations,
damn,
his tools lying carelessly where he had dropped them in a black, gaping aperture.
That's not right.
The great blocking stone lay in the bottom of the excavation he had made.
What's that doing over there?
As if thrust carelessly inside. Warily, he thrust the lantern forward.
Let me look in.
And peered into the small cave-like chamber, expecting to see, well, he knew not what.
Empty.
The bare rock sides of a long, narrow cell, large enough to receive a man's body.
Stones, different.
Which had apparently been built up.
That's odd.
Of roughly hewn, square-cut stones, cunningly and strongly joined together.
Damn. Lopez.
Explained Steve furiously.
Dirty coyote. He's been watching me work, and when I went after the lantern, he snuck up and pried the rock out and grabbed whatever was in there, I reckon. Blast his greasy hide, I'll fix him.
Savagely, he extinguished his lantern and glared across the shallow, brush-grown valley. And as he looked, he stiffened. From the corner of the hill, on the other side of which the shack of Lopez stood, a shadow moved.
Wait, who's that?
The slender moon was setting. The dim light and the play of the shadows baffling. But Steve's eyes were sharpened by the sun and winds of the wasteland.
Yeah, it's a man.
And he knew that it was some two-legged creature.
Wonder.
That was disappearing over the low shoulder of the mesquite-grown hill.
Beating it to his shack.
Snarled Brill.
He sure got something, or he wouldn't be traveling at that speed.
Brill swallowed, wondering why a peculiar trembling had suddenly taken hold of him. Was there unusual about a thieving old Mexican running home with his loot? Brill tried to drown the feeling that there was something peculiar about the gait of the dim shadow, which had seemed to move at a sort of slinking lope. There must have been need for swiftness when stocky old Juan Lopez elected to travel at such a strange pace.
Whatever he found is as much as mine as his,
swore Brill, trying to get his mind of the abnormal aspect of the figure's flight.
I got this land leased and I done all the work digging. A curse? Heck, no wonder he told me that stuff. Wanted me to leave it alone so he could get it himself. No wonder he ain't dug it up long before this. But you can never tell about them times.
Brill, striding down the gentle slope of the pasture, which sloped down to the creek bed, he passed into the shadows of the trees and dense underbrush, walked across the dry creek bed, noting absently that neither whippoorwill nor hoot owl called in the darkness. There was a waiting, listening tenseness in the air that he did not like. The shadows in the creek bed seemed too thick, too breathless. He wished he had not blown out the lantern, which he still carried, and was glad he had brought the pick, gripped like a battle axe in his right hand. He had an impulse to whistle, just to break the silence, and swore, and dismissed the thought. And he was glad when he climbed up the low opposite bank and emerged into the starlight. He walked up the slope and onto the hill, and looked down on the mesquite flat wherein stood Lopez's squalid hut. The light shone at the one window.
Packing his thing for a getaway, I reckon.
Frightening scream knifed the stillness. He staggered as if from a physical impact. He wanted to clap his hands over his ears to shut out the horror of that cry, which rose unbearably and then broke into an abnormal gurgle. Lopez! Steve felt the cold sweat spring onto him. Or somebody. Good
God!
Even as he grasped the words, he was running down the slope as fast as his long legs could carry him. Some unspeakable horror was taking place in that lonely hut, but he was going to investigate if it meant facing the devil himself. He tightened his grip on his pick handle as he ran. Wandering prowlers, murdering old Lopez for the loot he had taken from the mound, Steve thought. He forgot his raft. It would go hard for anyone he caught, molesting the old scoundrel, thief though he might be. He hit the flat, running hard, and then the light in the hut went out. And Steve staggered in full flight, bringing up against a mesquite tree with an impact that jolted a grunt out of him. He tore his hands on the thorns, rebounding with a sobbing curse. He rushed for the shack, nerving himself for what he might see, his hair still standing on end at what he had already seen. Grill tried the one door of the hut and found it bolted.
Lopez!
He shouted to Lopez.
You all right?
Received no answer. Yet, utter silence did not reign. From within came a curious, muffled, worrying sound that ceased as Brill swung his pick crashing against the door. The flimsy portal splintered, and Brill leaped into the dark hut, eyes blazing, pick swung high for a desperate onslaught. But no sound ruffled this grisly silence, and in the darkness, nothing stirred, though Brill's chaotic imagination peopled the shadowed corners of the hut with shapes of horror. With a hand damp with perspiration, he found a match and struck it. Besides him, only old Lopez occupied the hut. Old Lopez, stark dead on the dirt floor, arms spread wide like a crucifix, mouth sagging open in a semblance of idiocy, eyes wide and staring with a horror Brill found intolerable. The one window gaped open, showing the method of that slayer's exit, possibly his entrance as well. Brill went to that window and gazed out warily. He saw only the sloping hillside on one hand and the mesquite flat on the other.
What the?
He started. Was that a hint of a movement among the stunted shadows of the mesquite and chaparral? Or had he but imagined he glimpsed a dim, loping figure among the trees? He turned back as the match burned down to his fingers. He lit the old coal oil lamp on the rude table, cursing as he burned his hand. The globe of the lamp was very hot, as if it had been burning for hours. Reluctantly, he turned to the corpse on the floor. Whatever sort of death had come to Lopez, it had been horrible. But Brill gingerly examined the dead man, found no wound, no mark of knife or bludgeon on him.
Blood.
There was a thin smear in Brill's questing hand.
Here's
he found the source, three or four tiny punctures in Lopez's throat, from which blood had oozed sluggishly. At first, he thought that it had been inflicted with a thin, round, edgeless dagger.
A stiletto?
Then he shook his head. He had seen stiletto.
Doesn't look like any scar I got. Looks more like I have an animal. Fangs. Pointed fangs.
Yet Brill did not believe there were deep enough to have caused death. Nor had much blood flowed from them. A brief, abhorrent, with grisly speculations rose up in the dark corners of his mind, that Lopez had died of fright, and that the wounds had been inflicted either simultaneously with his death or at an instant afterward. And Steve noticed something else. Scattered about on the floor lay a number of dingy leaves of paper, scrawled in the old Mexican's crude hand.
He said he'd write down the curse.
There were the sheets on which he had written. There was the stump of a pencil on the floor.
And this lamp is still hot.
All mute witness that the old Mexican had been seated at the rough-hewn table, writing for hours. Then it was not he who opened the mound chamber and stole the contents. But who was it, in God's name? And who or What was it that Brill had glimpsed loping over the shoulder of the hill?
Well, there's nothing for it. Only thing I can do now is get on back and saddle up. Better ride over to Coyote Wells, tell the sheriff about the murder.
Brill gathered up the papers.
Better take these.
The last was crumpled in the old man's clutching hand.
Oh, come on, Juan.
Brill secured it with some difficulty.
You want to give it to me anyway? Come on here. Yeah, all right.
Then as he turned to extinguish the light, he hesitated, crossed himself with a crawling fear that lurked at the back of his mind, fear of the shadowy thing he had seen across the window just before the lights was extinguished in the hut. The long arm of the murderer, he thought, reaching for the lamp to put it out, no doubt. What had there been abnormal of inhuman about that vision, distorted though it must have been in the dim lamplight and shadow? As a man strives to remember the details of a nightmare dream, Steve tried to define in his mind some clear reason that would explain why that flying glimpse had unnerved him to the extent of blundering headlong into a tree, and why the mere vague remembrance of it now caused cold sweat to break out on him. Cursing himself to keep up his courage, he lighted his lantern, blew out the lamp on the rough table, and resolutely set forth, grasping his pick like a weapon. After all, why should certain seemingly abnormal aspects about a sordid murder upset him? Such crimes were abhorrent, but common enough, especially meant the people around here who cherished their feuds, but common enough. Then as he stepped into the silent, star-flecked night, he brought up short. From across the creek sounded the sudden soul-shrieking shriek of a horse in deadly terror, then a mad drumming of hoofs that receded in the distance. Was it a panther lurking in the hills? Had a monster cat slain old Lopez? Then why was not the victim marked with the scars of fierce hooked talons, and who extinguished the light in the hut? As he wondered, Drill was running swiftly toward the dark creek. Not lightly does a cowpuncher regard the stampeding of his stock. As he passed into the darkness of the brush along the dry creek, Brill found his tongue strangely dry. He kept swallowing, and he held the lantern high. It made but faint impressions in the gloom, but seemed to accentuate the blackness of the crowding shadows. For some strange reason, thought entered Brill's mind. Though the land was new to the Anglo-Saxons, it was relatively old. That broken and desecrated tomb was mute evidence that the land was ancient to man, and suddenly the night and the hills and the shadows bore on Brill with a sense of hideous antiquity. Here had long generations of men lived and died before Brill's ancestors ever heard of the land. In the night, in the shadows of this very creek, men had no doubt given up their ghosts in grisly ways. With these reflections, Brill hurried through the shadows of the thick trees. He breathed deeply in relief when he emerged from the trees on his own side, hurrying up the gentle slope of the railed corral. He held up his lantern, investigating. The corral was empty. Not even the placid cow was in sight. The bars were down. That pointed to human agency, and the affair took on a newly sinister aspect. Someone did not intend that Brill should ride to Coyote Wells that night. It meant that the murderer intended making his getaway and wanted a good start on the law. Or else, Brill grinned wryly. Far away across the mesquite flat, he believed he could still catch the faint and faraway noise of a running horse.
What in God's name had given them such a fright?
A cold finger of fear played shudderingly on Brill's spine. Steve headed for the house. He did not enter boldly. He crept
clear around the shack, peering suddenly into the dark windows, listening with a painful intensity for some sound to betray the presence of the lurking killer. At last he ventured to open a door and step in. He threw the door back against the wall to find if anyone were hiding behind it, lifted the lantern high, and stepped in, heart pounding, pick gripped fiercely, his feelings a mixture of fear and red rage. But no hidden assassin leaped upon him, and a wary exploration of the shack revealed nothing. With a sigh of relief, Brill locked the doors, made fast the windows, and lighted his old coil oil lamp. The thought of old Lopez lying, glassy-eyed corpse, alone in the hut across the creek, made him wince and shiver. But he did not intend to start for town on foot in the night. He drew from his hiding place his reliable old Colt 45, spun the blue steel cylinder, and grinned mirthlessly. Maybe the killer did not intend to leave any witnesses to the crime alive.
Well, let him come.
He or they find a young cowpuncher with a six-shooter less easy prey than an old unarmed Mexican. And that reminded Brill of the papers he had brought from the hut, taking care that he was not in line with a window through which a sudden bullet might come. He settled himself to read with one ear alert stealing sounds. As he read the crude, laborious script, a slow, cold horror grew in his soul. It was a tale of fear that the old Mexican had scrawled, a tale handed down from generation to generation, a tale of ancient time. And Brill read the wanderings of the caballero Fernando de Estrada and his armored pikemen, who dared the deserts of the southwest when all was strange and unknown. There were some 40-odd soldiers, servants, and masters at the beginning, the manuscript ran. There was the Captain de Estrada and the priest and young Juan Zavilla and Don Santiago de Valdez, a mysterious nobleman who had taken off a hopelessly floating ship in the Caribbean Sea. All the others of the crew and passengers had died of plague, he had said, and he had cast their bodies overboard. So de Estrada had taken aboard the ship that was bearing the expedition from Spain, and de Valdez joined them in their expeditions. Brill read something of their wanderings, told in the crude style of old Lopez, as the old Mexican's ancestors had handed down the tale for over 300 years. The bare written words dimly reflected the terrific hardships the explorers had encountered. Drought, thirst, floods, the desert sandstorms, the spears of hostile Indians. There was another peril that old Lopez told, a grisly lurking horror that fell upon the lonely caravan wandering through the immensity of the wild. Man by man they fell, and no man knew the slayer. Fear and black suspicion ate at the heart of the expedition like a canker, and their leader knew not where to turn. This they all knew among them was a fiend in human form. Men began to draw apart from each other, to scatter along the line of march, and this mutual suspicion that sought security and solitude made it easier for the fiend. The skeleton of the expedition staggered through the wilderness, lost, dazed, and helpless, and still the unseen horror hung on their flanks, dragging down the stragglers, preying on drowsing sentries and sleeping men. And on the throat of each was found the wounds of pointed fangs that bled the victim white, so that living knew with what manner of evil they had to deal. Men reeled through the wild, calling on the saints or blaspheming in their terror, fighting frenziedly against sleep until they fell with exhaustion and sleep stole on them with horror and death.
suspicion centered on a great black man, a cannibal slave from Calabar. They put him in chains, but young Juan Zavilla went the way of the rest, and then the priest was taken. But the priest fought off his fiendish assailant and lived long enough to gasp the demon's name to Estrada and Brill, shuddering and wide-eyed red. And now it was evident to De Estrada that the good priest had spoken the truth, and the slayer was Don Santiago de Valdez, who was a vampire, an undead fiend, subsisting on the blood of the living. And De Estrada called in mind a certain foul nobleman who had lurked in the mountains of Castile since the days of the Moors, feeding off the blood of helpless victims, which lent him a ghastly immortality. The nobleman had been driven forth. None knew where he had fled, but it was evident that he and Don Santiago were the same man. He had fled Spain by ship, and De Estrada knew that the people of that ship had died, not by plague, as the fiend had represented, but by the fangs of the vampire. De Estrada and the black man and the few soldiers who still lived went searching for him and found him stretched in bestial sleep in a clump of chaparral. Fully gorged he was with human blood from his last victim. Now it is well known that a vampire, like a great serpent, when well gorged, falls into a deep sleep and may be taken without peril. But De Estrada was at a loss as to how to dispose of the monster. For how may the dead be slain? For a vampire is a man who has died long ago, yet is quick with certain foul unlife. The men urged that the caballero drive a stake through the fiend's heart, cut off his head, uttering the holy words that would crumple the long dead body into dust. But the priest was dead, and De Estrada feared that in the act the monster might waken. So they took Don Santiago, lifting him softly, and bore him to an old Indian mound nearby. Thus they opened, taking forth the bones they found there, and they placed the vampire within and sealed up the mound. Dios grant.
It is a place accursed,
judgment.
And I wished I had starved elsewhere before I came into this part of the country seeking work. For I have known of the land and the creek and the mound with its terrible secret ever since childhood. Do you see, Señor Brill, why you must not open the mound and wake the fiend?
There the manuscript ended with an erratic scratch of the pencil that tore the crumpled leaf. Brill rose, his heart pounding wildly, his face bloodless, his tongue cleaving to his palate. He gagged and fought for words.
That's why the spur was in the mound. One of them Spaniards dropped it while it was digging. And I might have known it'd been dug into before, the way there was charcoal all scattered about. But good God!
Aghast, he shrank from the black visions. An undead monster, stirring in the gloom of his tomb, thrusting from within to push aside the stone loosened by the pick of ignorance. A shadowy shape loping over the hill toward a light that betokened a human prey. A frightfully long arm that crossed a dim, lighted window.
Oh, it's madness. Lopez is plumb loco. There ain't no such things as vampires. If there is, why didn't he get to me? If there is, why didn't he get to me first instead of Lopez? Unless he was scouting about, making sure everything before he pounced, or... Oh, hell, it's a pipe. Oh, my.
The words froze in his throat. At the window, a face glared and gibbered soundlessly at him. Two icy eyes pierced his very soul. A shriek burst from his throat, and that ghastly visage vanished. but the very air was permeated by the foul stench that had hung about the ancient mound, and now the door creaked, bent slowly inward. Brill backed up against the wall, his gun shaking in his hand. It did not occur to him to fire through the door. In his chaotic brain, he had but one thought, that only that thin portal or wood separated him from some whore born out of the womb of night and gloom and the dark past. His eyes were distended as he saw the door give, as he heard the staples of the bolt groan. The door burst in. Brill did not scream. His tongue was frozen to the roof of his mouth. His fear-glazed eyes took in the tall, vulture-like form, the icy eyes, the long black fingernails, the molding garb, hideously ancient, the long spurred boot, the slouch hat with its crumpling feather, the flowing cloak that was falling to slow shreds. Framed in the black doorway, crouched that abhorrent shape out of the past. And Brill's brain reeled. A savage cold radiated from the figure, the smoldering clay and charnel house refuge. And then the undead came at the living like a swooping vulture. Brill fired point blank and saw a shred of rotten cloth fly from the thing's breast. The vampire reeled beneath the impact of the heavy ball, then righted himself and came on with frightful speed. Brill reeled back against the wall with a croaking cry, the gun falling from his nerveless hand. The black legends were true then, human weapons were powerless. For may a man kill one already dead for long centuries as mortals die, and the claw-like hands at his throat roused the young cowpuncher to a frenzy of madness. Steve Brill fought the cold, dead, crawling thing that sought his life and soul. Of that ghastly battle, Brill never remembered much. It was a blind chaos in which he scrambled, beast-like, tore and slugged and hammered. Where long black nails, like the talons of a panther, tore at him, and pointed teeth snapped again and again at his throat, rolling and tumbling about the room, both half enveloped by the musty folds of that ancient rotting cloak. They smote and tore at each other among the ruins of the shattered furniture. And the fury of the vampire was not more terrible than the fear-crazed desperation of his victim. They crashed headlong into the table, knocking it down upon its side, and the coal lamp spluttered on the floor, spraying the walls with sudden flame. Brill fought the bite of the burning oil that splattered him, but in the red frenzy of the fight, he gave no heed. The black talons were tearing at him, the inhuman eyes burning icily into his soul. Between his frantic fingers, the withered flesh of the monster was hard as dry wood, and wave upon wave of blind madness swept over Steve Brill. Like a man battling a nightmare, he screamed and smote, while all about him the flame leaped up and caught at the walls and roof. Through darting jets and licking tongues of flame they reeled and rolled like a demon and a mortal warring on the fire-laced floors of hell. And in the growing tumult of the flames, Brill gathered himself for one last volcanic burst of frenzied strength, breaking away and staggering up, grasping and bloody, he lunged blindly at the foul shape and caught it in a grip not even the vampire could break. And whirling his fiendish assailant bodily on high, he dashed him down across the up-tilted edge of the fallen table as a man might break a stick of wood across his knee. Something cracked like a snapping branch, and the vampire fell from Brill's grasp to wither in a strange, broken posture on the burning floor. Yet it was not dead, for its flaming eyes still burned on Brill with a ghastly hunger, and it strove to crawl towards him with its broken spine as a dying snake crawled. Brill, reeling and gasping, shook the blood from his eyes,
staggered blindly through the broken door. And as a man runs from the portals of hell, he ran, stumbling through the mesquite and chaparral until he fell from utter exhaustion. Looking back, he saw the flame of the burning house and thanked God that it would burn until the very bones of Don Santiago de Valdez were utterly consumed and destroyed from the knowledge of men. Shoes and a big straw hat.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stand By Your Land, a community forum on keeping public lands in public hands, on July 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Keene Garage in Portland. Stand By Your Land will feature detailed presentations from Oregon Wild, the Audubon Society of Portland, the Oregon National Desert Association, and BARC on the many values of public lands, the current proposals to take them away, and how to successfully fight against this attack. Again, that's Stand By Your Land, a community forum on keeping public lands in public hands, on July 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Keene Garage, 505 Northwest 13th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Willamette River Festival and Movie in the Park, Sunday, July 30th from 1 to 10 p.m. at the Cathedral Park waterfront in Portland. The Willamette River Festival is a celebration on the waterfront with live music by Shanghaied on the Willamette, Norman Sylvester, and more, as well as a beer garden, food carts, an environmental fair, DJ Anjali and the Incredible Kid, and more. Again, that's the Willamette River Festival and Movie in the Park, Sunday, July 30th from 1 to 10 p.m. at the Cathedral Park waterfront in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Dingo, is showing Tuesday, July 18th at 7 p.m. Miles Davis made his only acting appearance in this film about a jazz trumpeter who dares to realize his musical dreams in the Australian outback. The film also has an award-winning Miles Davis soundtrack.
Did you like the music?
Again, that's Dingo, showing Tuesday, July 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Gotta go now, John, before they take off and leave me. Nice meeting you.
Why not go on, nigga? You go insane. This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Crystal Clear Supplements, providing nootropics, dietary supplements, and botanicals to the local community and patrons on the internet. Crystal Clear Supplements is located at 3211 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland, just south of Powell Boulevard by the Aladdin Theater. Information and online shopping at crystalclearsupplements.com.
The Tiki Cha-Cha Club.
Here we are. I mean, there we were.